So, hello and welcome to Galway Double Take. This is a takeover from the Journalism MA course, and I am your host, Philip Linfors, and my co-host is...
Declan Hayes.
Welcome to the show, everybody. So, Declan, tell me what this show is about today.
So, Galway Double Take is we're looking for the alternative angle in news stories and debates. So, we're trying to create a debate atmosphere here. So, we're going to start off the show kind of introducing... The issue
that happened with the CityLink bus a few weeks ago, recently in BusLink, or CityLink rather. So there was a tweet, a viral tweet went out that said, the CityLink Galway to Dublin bus driver just announced that if everyone is watching films or listening to music on their phone without headphones on, they'll be asked to leave their bus or the vehicle.
Fantastic.
He is an idol.
So that tweet went viral. People got crazy over that thing.
So this obviously created a great debate. So do you think people should be allowed to wear or listen to music without headphones on the bus? Or is it fair that they could be thrown out?
I mean, it's completely... It depends on where you're at. I mean... As a host of this show, you guys should probably know that I'm not Irish. I am Swedish. That's why you might hear probably a different accent than what you're used to hear here. But in Sweden, nobody would never do that because that would be so out of line. In Sweden, everybody just wanted to be like the rest and like not be making any noises at all. So that would never happen in Sweden. But I've spent a lot of time in the States, and there you see people all the time. There's like people in... everywhere playing music from their phones or like playing games with music loud like that. But this bus driver on CityLink, he got pretty popular after doing this, right?
Yeah, it does create an interesting debate though, because like if someone wants to listen to music and they don't have headphones, like it is an open space. You know, it's a bit harsh. You know, they've bought the ticket. Why should they be thrown off the bus? It doesn't seem fair to me, really.
So what we actually did, we went out there to ask people about what they thought of this whole debate.
First of all, it's a hazard for when the bus driver is like driving. It could be distracting to him. It could be distracting to the people on the bus. Like personally, I'd find it really annoying if like somebody's blasting out music while I'm trying to just like, I don't know, you could be doing random things, but it's just annoying, you know? I don't see why they're getting backlash. It's not that hard to just plug in your earphones and not disturb the people around you.
The bus is a free zone to do what you want. Well, not do what you want, but you're allowed to sit down and listen to music if you want to listen to music. He listens to music to me. No, that's not acceptable.
You should have kicked them back.
Yeah, exactly. No, but that's not right. They shouldn't do that. It's different if you're screaming on the bus, but you're not, so...
Listen to music, so shouldn't worry.
So, Philip, what do you do on the bus?
I mean, if I'm on the bus or if I'm on the metro, I usually play a lot of like video games. I play my Nintendo DS a lot of times, play a lot of Pokemon, and I play all the Super Mario games. And sometimes, actually, I play the music out loud if I forget my headphones back home.
Scandalous.
Oh, yes.
But speaking of video games, we're actually joined in studio right now with Lily O'Connor, an expert speedrunner on Mario Kart. And Brandon Walsh, the VP for Welfare and Equality here in NUIG.
You said one of the best speedrunners on Mario Kart. I want to stop there for a second. Please tell me a little more about that, because I'm a gamer myself and one of the best Mario Kart speedrunners. Tell me a little about that, please.
So speedrunning in general, it's just completing the video. Every video game, or at least most video games, have an objective to complete. So speedrunning as a community would be completing that objective in the fastest time possible.
And you are really, really fast, I assume.
Yeah, I'm really good at Mario Kart. I'm ranked roughly top 10 in the world, and that's out of a pool of about 300 to 400 players. So
wow.
I can't confirm that. I did play against you recently, and you destroyed me in Mario Kart. It was a humbling experience.
Yeah, two conventions in Galway, Itzacon and Akumacon, we ran tournaments. If anyone could beat me, they'd win free tickets for life. No one could claim the tickets.
Did you give it a try, Declan?
I gave it a try, and I almost won like one race out of the eight that we played. But
I think you're lying.
it was one of the more Mario Kart tracks. I had a lot going my way, and yet I still couldn't win it.
Yeah. So can you tell us more about your preference in video gaming? Like, how many hours has it taken you to get where you're at today at that level?
So specifically, I do the 200cc 48 track items on Mario Kart 8 Deluxe speedrun, which is a mouthful, but every speedrun is kind of divided up into different categories. That's the one I'm kind of very much into.
Yeah.
And in that mode, I have roughly 700 hours in that one game. And that's not including any other games I play or run.
So I'm just wondering, how do you find the balance in life between playing video games and just living your life?
Because 700 hours is a couple of hours.
700 hours, yeah, but I've had it for a year. So which, it does sound like a lot, but considering that's kind of my main hobby and that's the community that really gives me a lot of drive, I don't think it's that much. And considering it's when you kind of take over a game and when you speedrun it like that, that's really the only game you play.
Yeah,
I don't really play.
It sounds like you got a lot of raw talent, though.
Yeah, like
it's not more practice makes perfect. This talent is everything here.
A little bit. Like, I haven't played Mario Kart since the GameCube release, yeah. So like I've played pretty much every iteration since then.
Well, in 2018, the World Health Organization actually claimed that video game addiction can be a real thing. They described it as a pattern of gaming behavior characterized by impaired control over gaming, escalation of gaming despite the occurrence of negative consequences. So I'm not going to say that you were a gaming addict or whatever, but what do you think are the kind of the mental health positive and negatives of playing video games that much?
Like, as with anything that can release endorphins, you can get addicted to it. That's just a fact of life. Now, it may not be as addictive as drugs or anything, but again, I'm not a doctor. I can't say that. I think it's fair to say it's not as dangerous as drugs, you know, necessarily. But yeah, you absolutely can be addicted to video games, and you need to have that balance. Obviously, still go outside, go get some exercise, go eat something, please. But to have it as a hobby, I don't necessarily think it's a bad thing.
And so, Brandon, in general, just how do you avoid burnout, and like, how do you control your mental health and keep a positive mental health?
So it can be quite tricky sometimes, but it's a different thing. Like, we see more and more students now that are affected by anxiety and stress due to their college course. A lot of students have to work as well to put themselves through college. So things like gaming come into it. Like, some people do yoga to de-stress and relax, but then some people game. And it's just like, especially things like gaming, it's about finding, it's quite a fine line between being a good recreational thing that's positive and then becoming an addiction and like all you can think about and focus, which then leads into burnout, because a huge part of burnout is just lack of concentration, a lack of motivation to do things in college. But gaming can be positive as well, and different things, and just promoting better mental health and just being able to relax and sit down with the controller.
Yeah, there's so many different ways of gaming as well. I mean, I'm definitely a gamer. I've been playing video games since I was a kid, but I'm also a sports person, and now I do my workouts in VR on my PlayStation 4. So I play these boxing games and like Beat Saber, which is sort of a musical, and it's a workout for me.
That's
so I love doing it that way. So I've spent, like, if we just look at what I've been playing, like Football Manager, when I was in high school, I played so many hours of Football Managers and games like that. But nowadays I can mix it up perfectly.
But Philip, you've been here for what, two months in Ireland?
Yeah, I moved here from Sweden in early January, like 7th of January.
So it sounds like you maybe need to get a bit out more if you're stuck at home playing video games all day. So have you tried going to a hurling match?
Hurling? I heard about hurling, but no.
Well, wouldn't it be funny if you did a match report on a hurling match?
Oh.
What we have here is two teams. It's super cold, they have shorts, and they run around with broomsticks from like the Quidditch game or something.
Yeah, they can pretty much do anything with those sticks except fly, though. That is the only thing you have to bear in mind about this field. But look, we've had two goals already. That's not something you see in soccer very often now, you'd have to say.
Oh, it's been two goals already.
Have you never kept an eye on things?
I didn't see them.
The ball is a bit like the snitch, it does travel around quite quick. You have to keep an eye on it.
So let me tell you guys about the rules. They have sticks, there's one ball, and sometimes people scream white, and sometimes they scream yellow. And that means different things. Am I correct?
It's a bit more than that now.
Somebody was screaming white when they hit the ball up high. He said white ball.
The ball is white, but what I was saying on that occasion was wide ball, which means
wide the ball.
Yeah, wide
ball. It's going
wide. Yeah, yeah. And it's a red card for the number 4, 10 minutes into the game already.
So what does a red card mean here?
A red card is a bit like, as you would say in Sweden, a red card.
Yeah, yeah.
And it's basically where, just like in soccer, where if you get it, you have to go off straight away.
Oh, so they're one man short now for the rest of the
game.
Yeah,
they're down to 14 men, yeah, yeah. So it's going to be difficult for anyone to go away from in on here, you'd have to feel.
So this is two university teams, right?
Yeah, that's it, essentially. Yeah,
I wonder what they study.
Mary, you're obviously a teacher trained in college. A lot of them do actually choose to be primary school teachers.
I would never let one of these guys teach my children something after seeing what they do to each other with these sticks, with these brooms. Okay, so now the game has been on for 15 minutes, and let me tell you what I know about hurling now. That's it. It's a good crack. So the halftime score is 2-9 to 2-8, which means there's 2 points to one team and 9 points to the other team, and also 2 points to one team and also 8 to the other team.
Completely mixed up. It's 2 goals and 9 points for Galway, 2 goals and 8 points for Mary Eye. That's it.
So who's in the lead?
It's Galway that are in the lead.
So now the second half is about to start, and he starts there. He blows his whistle, drops the ball, and everybody just rushes in.
Yeah, pretty much. Once the ref throws it in, it's just anarchy.
He's a good hurling player.
Hurler, yeah, you have it right. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Good hurling boy.
Luke, yeah, leave it there, Luke. Yeah, leave it there. Pressure Luke.
On. I think Luke should leave it there.
Come on, come on.
I love that all the brooms are lying on the grass, lined up perfectly.
I know why you insist on calling them brooms.
Oh, yeah, sorry. The hurls.
The hurls are the come ons in Irish.
The brooms. One thing that is very interesting is that everyone has so short shorts. So short. It is very cute, I think. There are many cute legs. Now we have a penalty, apparently. So what will happen now? What is the penalty here?
So you're about to see it now. So it's basically, it used to be that you could put two players on the line with the goalkeeper. But now...
You already lost me. I thought a penalty would be easy to understand.
Like, we see guys like putting those sideline cuts over the bar from like way out on the sideline. We don't know how they do it.
What's a bar? Oh, you mean the bar?
The bar.
My bad. I have noticed there's a lot of peeing in the bushes going on from both teams. The Galway players are closest to the river, so they stand up and pee straight out in the air. And the other team, I have forgot the name, but they actually have bushes to pee into. And there's a lot of people doing it. I see 3 now, and it was 4 before.
They're bearing down on goal here now. It's number 12. Gets it up to 13. He's going to turn around. He's going to shoot. Oh, back of the net. It's wow. Definitely over now. That's Galway's third goal of the evening.
Lovely goal by number 13. The game is sort of coming to an end, I think. And I have noticed one thing. They are very skilled with the hurls. And that was the full-time whistle.
What a wonderful match report there, Philip. What did you make of hurling?
It was a very interesting game of sports, I would say. It was the first time I've ever saw something quite like it. The only time I've been ever like as close to a hurling game was when I read the Harry Potter books and about the Quidditch, basically. But it was like you guys say here, it was a good crack.
And you'll be bringing it back to Sweden so soon.
We'll see about that, I think.
The great Philip Lindfors is the man who brought hurling to Sweden.
Yeah.
Now, listener, sometimes in radio it can be difficult to transition from one topic to the next because obviously we've just had a nice light topic there in hurling. But now we must go to a more serious topic. So we're going to play this jingle here.
Flirt Newsfeed. Local.
Gianna Care are an unregulated pro-life crisis pregnancy agency. They have received backlash for their agenda and giving women false information in the past. But they say that they are providing a much-needed service for women. Our reporters spoke to the Galway branch to find out the truth.
My name is Laura Thornton, and I'm the Director of Operations in Gianna Care Galway.
What kind of services do you provide then exactly to help women who are in crisis pregnancy?
We tailor our service to each woman, so depending on what she actually needs. So it can be anything from just preparing a maternity bag for the hospital to a year or two of support, emotional support, counselling. we have volunteers that would, if they have no partner, I suppose some women then need a lot of financial help if they're maybe in college, I suppose counselling for relationships, post-abortive counselling.
And how many women have you assisted since it was set up here in 2018?
In here, we're approaching about 20 at the moment, so we also have about 3 or 4 post-abortive women, whether that was something in the last year or 20 years ago. Most of Janneker is volunteer, and we rely solely on donations. 99% of the things that we pass on to mothers are all donated, so we don't have to buy very much as such.
There was the Times piece done on Janneker, which kind of associated it with pro-life organisations, yes. Or maybe said it was provided inaccurate advice in some cases. How do you feel about that piece that came out?
I suppose because it's a particular journalist that I suppose doesn't hold too much weight around Ireland as such, but all I can say is that I suppose the people that are involved with Janneker are the nicest, kindest, most generous people, and the volunteers that work alongside us are amazing, so I don't really mind if people say certain things. I know the truth, and I know that we're helping a lot of women that other people aren't. So I suppose those kind of things, especially starting off in Galway, it's going to take time.
And do you think the role of a crisis pregnancy service should be?
Our aim is to offer life-affirming options, because we don't see any other agency that are involved with the HSE or elsewhere doing that, so there is a big gap in society for that.
Yeah, you'll be talking about options but not abortion.
Well, we don't need to do that, because they already know that their options are there, because you can easily find it on everywhere, the internet or whatever, so everyone's aware of that, but they're not aware of who provides the life affirming options. So if they do want to keep their baby, we are here to do that, to help them, because most of the time a crisis is purely financial. It rarely is anything else. It's financial mixed with emotional kind of relationship situations. So
so there is a lot of demand there, and this isn't a government regulated or financed service. Do you think there should be a government financed and regulated service?
Well, yeah, if definitely the government should be financing things like this. But that can be done through charitable status, I suppose. So
why do you think that's not happening at the moment for Janneker?
I don't know. That's something that will come down the line, I'm sure.
The service has been portrayed to dissuade women from having abortions. Would you say that is something the service actively does or not?
Oh, no. We would just, like, we don't persuade anyone to do anything. So you can't do that. We just talk to women, you know, people talk about choice, so the choice should be there on both sides of the coin.
Oisín McGovern and Eimear McCauley for Galway Pulse.
In studio now, we've got the reporters, Oisín McGovern and Eimear McCauley. You did this interview with Janneker. What were your perspectives on this?
Hi, Declan. Well, I suppose me and Oisín were really coming at this with completely different perspectives, but we're good friends and colleagues, so it was really interesting to do it together. I campaigned for pro-choice. I campaigned for the British government to pass a law that allowed people to get abortions in Northern Ireland. So that's obviously my perspective approaching this, and I would be against an unregulated crisis pregnancy service, but I'll talk more about it later. Some of the things we found did surprise me and challenge the views I had. Oisín, what about you?
Well, I'd be coming at it obviously from the opposite. I would have campaigned during the time of the referendum to keep the 8th Amendment in the Constitution. I believe that, you know, once a child is formed in the womb, that it should be protected. And, you know, coming to Janneker, you know, I didn't really know what to expect. You know, in the aftermath of the referendum, a lot of people in the pro-life movement were kind of dazed. So I started hearing about Janneker an awful lot more as, you know, a means that we could help support women who wanted to keep their babies. And I have to say, just Janneker do a really, really fantastic job. They work very, very closely with each and every one of their clients. And there was a lot of talk in the referendum about choice. And I think Janneker is truly pro-choice in the sense that it will help women if they want to keep their babies, but they will also be respectful for women who choose to have abortions as well. So that was the kind of general impression I formed, I suppose.
Can I come in as a stupid Swede here, new to your country? When was this, when you said you were out protesting for the referendum? When
were
was
separate
this?
Things, kind of, weren't they?
Yeah, so the Irish referendum would have been in 2008.
Yeah, the Republic of Ireland, there was a referendum in 2018.
And okay, then yeah. Northern Ireland, just very recently in the last few months.
Because we come from very different backgrounds here. Abortion got legal in 1938 in Sweden, so it's a pretty different topic there.
So I would disagree with lots of things that Oisín just said. I mean, I really do believe it is a woman's choice. I have quite little regard for a man's opinion on what a woman should do with her body. I think it's her right. What I did find that challenged me was there is a lack of health provision for women who are having unplanned pregnancies in the south of Ireland. And that's why I worry that women who maybe aren't decided or who maybe don't feel that keeping their baby would be the best thing for them would go to the service. And then they have someone who's a client advocate who would come along to you with every appointment, who would be there at the birth if you wanted them to be. And I kind of worry that that influence could kind of, you know, convince you to keep a baby, maybe if it even wasn't in your best interest. She said, you know, a crisis can go on up to 2 years. And that kind of made me wonder, like, should your life be in crisis for that many years? But then I also did find that she was a person who genuinely wanted to help people and that they offered free counselling. And that's like gold dust down here. So what I came away with it was, oh, well, they actually do help some people, but this should be regulated and the government should be financing a service that doesn't have an agenda, I think.
But can I ask you, Oisín, who has the other side of this one, where do you draw the line of when the woman should have the choice?
Well, what do you mean by that?
If we're talking about rape and incest, should the woman have a choice in those cases, or?
Well, I believe women should have a choice, but the problem with abortion is that the child inside the womb has no choice, and we don't have this discussion with children that.
But would the woman have a choice then if let's say a woman got raped, does she have a choice?
In whether she wants to keep the baby or not?
No, if she wants to get raped or not.
No, women don't have a choice of whether they get raped or not.
So, Oisín, just with Gianna Care specifically, like, do they have the one place that they are? Are they expanding, or what is going on with them?
Yeah, well, they have been based in Dublin since 2008, but they're set up in Galway about a month ago, and they're currently looking to expand to other locations across the country. And with regards to the regulation, as far as I can see, they seem to be doing a pretty good job. They work very, very closely with their clients. They tailor their care to each specific client, and I would certainly welcome to see them open up more clinics in the future, I think.
I would advocate for this service being replaced by a government regulated service that would discuss all options by women, but I do recognise that there is currently a gap and that some women probably have received a degree of help from this service. And I think that's quite rare. And I think it does highlight the need for us as a society to support young mothers more, because we forget about what a really difficult time that is for people, I think.
So do you think the government should step in, and do you think it should just be that they regulate on someone and Gianna Care can still do what they're doing, or do you think the government should be replacing Gianna Care?
I think the government should be replacing Gianna Care with an agency that doesn't have an agenda, that will provide financial aid for young mothers, that will do scans and mammograms, that will have counselling, that will have volunteers who will come to your, if you've had a relationship breakdown, who will come to your birthing appointments with you if you don't have that family and friend support. I absolutely think that we should have a publicly funded service like that, and Gianna Care, the existence of it, highlights the fact that that's what we need.
And do you have the faith that the government will be able to work on that in this?
Absolutely not. That's why agencies like this exist.
And where do you see Gianna Care going in the future themselves, both of you?
I think they're going to expand, as Oisín said, and I think if they are going to expand, then maybe seeing more regulations being brought in would be for the best.
So thank you for joining us in the studio. What have you seen the news today with the royal family?
How can you not have seen the news today about the royal family?
They've been everywhere.
It's everywhere. And I, as a Swedish person here in Ireland, I am shocked about the interest. People are going crazy. It's all over Twitter. It's all over Instagram. and all over the news. What are they doing here, and who are they?
So yeah, we are going to close out the show here, and just before we do, we just want to say that for anyone seeking advice on pregnancy, please call 1800-828-010. That number again is 1800-828-010.
That's live radio for you.
Yeah.
Now we're getting back to the royal family again.
So we're about to close out the show here with a nice package on the businesses around the royal family and how they've been impacted by it.
Before, tell me, who are they and what are they doing here in Galway?
Well, they've been just visiting. They were out in Salt Hill in Knocknacar. There was a video of Kate playing hurling, which I'm sure you would have enjoyed.
Yeah, definitely. So we will probably find out more. This has been Galway Double Take. Thank you so much for listening. I am Philip Linforce.
And I'm Declan Hart.
The closure of roads around the Latin Quarter area has led to concerns about a drop in footfall for local businesses. I spoke to a member of staff in a restaurant in the area who says the royal visit could negatively affect their trade.
I don't know how people will be able to get to my restaurant because half the town is closed.
Really? And do you think it could have been done any different, or do you think the town is getting value for money with the amount of money that's been spent on this trip?
Well, I mean, that remains to be seen. If there is going to be any money spent because of this trip, I mean, we're spending money on security and all the rest of it. Half the town is closed. That's going to affect all businesses. We're already in a quiet time. We've had nothing but storms for the last month, so people aren't leaving the house. I don't know, it remains to be seen. You might get a lot of people come to actually see them. I don't know.
However, at the front door bar on Cross Street Upper, it will be business as usual. So, Niamh, how will the royal visit affect business here?
It's just another day for us. It's just another Thursday.
And will there be any positive spin-off, like maybe more people gathered around that might be coming into the bar?
Well, I hope so. I hope people will get out and travel to see them and that there'll be more floating around.
And do you think it's a positive thing, the whole idea of the royal people coming to visit Ireland?
To be honest with you, I haven't really given it much thought. Yeah, sure, why not? Hopefully it'll just bring people out and about.
As part of their itinerary, Kate and William visited Chi Coley's Bar. A man sitting outside the pub explained what makes this establishment so unique. And why do you think they've chosen this pub here, Chi Coley's, above any of the others that are in the local district here?
Well, it's a very popular Irish traditional music pub, and a lot of the well-known, internationally well-known musicians play here, including Frankie Gavin, who's just inside now, at this minute even. And the prices here are reasonable, so it'll be a very typical Irish pub.
Just down the road, staff at the renowned Galway Woolen Market are hoping the Duke and Duchess will venture down to sample some of their unique products. Is there any chance, since the Duke and Duchess are calling into Chi Coley's down the road, any chance that they'll call in here to sample some of the products?
Well, we certainly hope they would, and we would make them most welcome. And I think it would be fantastic for, it's fantastic for the whole area that they're actually coming down our street and visiting Galway in general. And we most certainly will roll out the red carpet and make them very welcome if they deem to consider us.
What are the chances that they'll visit, do you think?
I'd say it's possibly 50-50. Nobody really knows kind of what is on their agenda at the moment or what type of a time schedule that they're actually on. When they're coming down this area, I would like to think that they would actually come in here, because it's quite an old established business, a second generation, and I think it would be fantastic for them to actually visit somewhere like here, because it's very representative of Galway and Galway culture.
Their visit may be short, but the Duke and Duchess of Cambridge can expect a caid meal of falcha from the people of Galway.
Flirt Newsfeed on 101.3 FM and flirtfm.ie.
Sports.
And a very good evening to everyone out there. This is the sports news here on Flirt FM for Thursday.